Hello. So, Larry, how was the learning?
It's good. Thank you for asking. We started the fifth parak of Psachim, so that's Korban Pesach,
yeah,
right? So, yeah, it was a little slower, and yeah. Also they were appreciating the graphic nature of it. Let's put it that. I said, "You're Kohanim, you have to," but they were like. Yeah, there were a couple, more graphic portions, right? So
yeah, that's great. I'd love to if we could spend some time afterwards, try to give some of the basics. I mean, I'm sure the Kahati Mishnah is excellent, and the fixtures are fantastic. But I think I'm learning right now the seventh parak of Psachim with the sixth parak of Psachim with Ezra. So I'm just a little bit ahead.
Yeah,
and I thought. He doesn't know which parts of Kachem are the most important and what makes the Korban Pesach different from other Korbanos. So I find myself giving a lot of introductory remarks.
So we actually read out of the newer Art Scroll Mishnayos, that newer version that the elucidated or whatever they're calling it. So they have a long introduction to 5 through 9, right? And so we took the time to read that in English together so that it would give them some framework. I don't know, it was probably it was a higher level of English, obviously, but hopefully gave them some framework for what we were about to, because I was worried about the same thing. They have no concept of this, right? So,
Yeah, for sure. We'll start in a minute. I know there's a couple more people coming. I found myself talking about eating the Korban Pesach is more fundamental than other carbonos. Mm-hmm. Making that point. The Art Scroll, the new Art Scroll is pretty good. I saw just a quick comment before we start. I saw that the Meiri says, Meiri asks the question, why is the Masechta called Psachim and not Pesach? Right? As opposed to Sukkah or Yuma. So he says, because it used to be two different Masechtas. There's one Masechta, the first four Prakim, and then the middle one about the Korban was kind of put in between. So they changed they called it Psachim. It was really interesting. And sometimes you see some of the Rishonim talk about how many Masechtas Mishnayos there are. The Rambam's there's 70 Masechtas, or 71, and the Gaon thought that there were 70. And then you go to the shelf and you count, and there's 73.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder where those extra Masechtas
came from. Isn't the last chapter of Pirkei Avot appended on also, something like that, if I remember? There's a few where it was...
Last parak is appended on. And my father pointed out to me a few times that the last parak of Bikurim is like that as well, right? And obviously, Bava Kamba, Mitzvah Bava Basra used to be one Masechta, and I think a lot of the, in general, whether to count Pirkei Avos as one of the Masechta, was a little bit of is it Musar or is it Halacha? The Rambam codified it as Halacha, which is an interesting point. So I thought we'd start our learning now. If anyone else comes on, then great. And I thought we would pick up with some of the themes we discussed last time, which is using some of the online tools when we need them. That's, I'll revisit some of those tools because it's worthwhile to revisit. And I thought we'd also learn a sugya together this week, just like we learned last week, and then open up one of the discussions that I think we should have, which is, what are the character traits that come along with becoming a budding Talmud scholar, and yeah, I guess that's it. That's a good main thing. What are the character traits that come along that we should kind of impress upon our children? This is an important character trait, and you know, they're a work in progress to get there. But there is a real character trait that comes along with it. And to highlight this, I wanted to look at a Gemara Irvin. So I'm just going to share my screen and pull that up. It's going to be one moment. Let's get this on the board here. Okay. Let's do the share screen here. Oops. Start broadcast. Okay. Let's do this. Okay, here we go. So this is a Gemara Irvin on Daf Nun Dal Amud Beis. Probably our children are not learning this Gemara anytime soon, but they may learn one particular story from this Gemara. And the Gemara at first is talking about the principle of chazara, you know, how it's important to review. And obviously there are different kinds of reviews, and the teachers in our schools give homework that are based on review. I'm going to start from the Tana Rabbanan by the two dots right here, and a little bit of a debate about reviewing here. So let's start this Gemara right here. Tana Rabbanan, our rabbis taught in the Braisa, which is a classic phrase, right? We're looking at a Tanaitic text that's not from the Mishnayos. So Tana Rabbanan, rabbis taught in the Braisa, Ketzad Seder Mishnah. How was the order of teaching? Meaning at Har Sinai or in the Midbar when Moshe Rabbeinu taught, how did it work? So Moshe Lamad Mipi Agvua. Moshe learned from Hashem. Then Nechmas Aaron. Aaron would come in. Vishanala Moshe would repeat it to him. Vishanala Moshe. Moshe would repeat it to him. Pirko, what he had learned. Nistalik Aaron. Aaron moved to the side. Vyasha the small. He sat on the left of Moshe. Go on. Nechnasu banav, then Aaron's sons came in. Shanullah and Moshe Pirkan, and then Moshe taught the sons. Nistalku banav, the sons would move over. Elazar Yashiv Yamin Moshe, Elazar would sit on the right of Moshe. V'isamar the small, Itamar would sit on the left of Moshe. The left of Aaron. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, they didn't sit that way. La'olam Aaron, Yamin Moshe. Really, Aaron was always on the right. Then Moshe Choser, Nechnasu Zakenim, the elders would come in, Vishanalahan, Moshe Pirkan, the Moshe would teach the elders, Nistalku Zakenim, then the Zakenim would move aside, Nechnasu Kolam, Vishanalahan, Moshe. Moshe would teach it a fourth time to all the people there. Ninsu Biyad Aaron, Arabra, it would come out that Aaron would hear it taught four times, Biyad Banav Shlosha, his sons would hear the Torah taught three times, Biyad Zakenim Shnaim, Biyad Kol Ha'am Echad. The people would hear it one time. But the cycle would continue. Then Nistalik Moshe. Moshe would move aside. Shanalahan Aaron. Aaron would teach one time. Then Nistalik Aaron. Shanalahan Banav. Aaron's children would teach. And then finally, Nistalku Banav. Shanalahan Zakenim. The elders would teach. Nimsa would turn out. Biyan HaKol Arba. Every person would hear the entire Torah, every halacha that was taught, four times. Mikan. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, from here Rabbi Eliezer taught, Chayev Adam Lishnas Tatamido Arba'a Pe'amim. A teacher should teach his students anything that he teaches four times. And the Gemara goes on to say that that's a Kal V'chomer. If Moshe needed to repeat it four times, then certainly us simpletons teaching it to our children need to learn it, need to teach it four times as well. And this is one more part of this Gemara. We're going to skip a couple of lines here. We then pick up by the Reish Ayin in the center of the page. That's Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva Omer Minayin. From where do we know? Skipping to the next line. Shechayav Adam Lishnas Tatamido Achi Omadenu. How do we know that a person has to keep teaching a student until his student learns it? Shneamar V'lamda Espenei Yisrael. Teach the Jewish people. Meaning Moshe is told to keep teaching the Jewish people. Uminayin. How do we know? Achi Tehei Sidur B'fihim. Until they know it well. Shneimar, as the pasuk says, sima b'fihim, place it in their mouths. Uminayin shechayav laharos l'panim. How do we know that we need to explain it to them? Shneimar ve'elam mishpatim asher tasim lifnehem. Okay, the Gemara goes on to say, you know, different people teaching it is also important, and people teaching it and turning into people learning it, and then turning into teachers themselves is also important. But let's jump to the text version of this Gemara so we can highlight. So it's very interesting, you know, point here about just doing Chazara four times and hearing the same thing from different voices and having an opportunity to speak for yourself. And we could see that our children, when they hear it in class, maybe they have it with the Chavrusa and they don't have it with the Chavrusa, then they'll come home and they'll review it with their parents. You know, that whole process is kind of like this process in the Gemara, that, you know, there has to be a certain amount of Chazara that comes into play. And, you know, Rabbi Elazar had like a strict one-size-fits-all kind of approach, looking at it based on how it was done in our Sinai. So four times is the key answer. And Rabbi Akiva says, disregard the number. You just have to keep teaching it until he finally gets it. And it can't just be something that's by rote. He has to be able to explain it. So we can appreciate that this is homework. This is homework. This is Chazara. And we have a role to play in that. Our students hear it in class, but they may be passive. I mean, maybe they're speaking up, maybe they're not. But when they come home and they can talk it out with us, you know, we play a role in that learning, in that Chazara process. Even if we're not necessarily teaching them anything new, Chazara is really important. And we can see Moshe Rabbeinu need to do Chazara. So then certainly we need to do Chazara, and our children need to do Chazara. We need to impress upon our children the importance of Chazara, and homework. Homework is definitely about that. So, you know, learning their own thing is what we talked about other times. But here, what they learn in school needs to be reviewed. Okay, well, to highlight how important that is, and to pick up on some midos, I want to show you the continuation of that Gemara. Right. So this is just the text of Gemara, so I can highlight. And I want to show you where our story starts. It starts with this word right here, Rebbe Pareda. If I can make it a little bit bigger. Rebbe Pareda, great, great rabbi in Amora, Rebbe Pareda, Havalei Hahu Talmida. He had this student, Tahavatani Le Arba'a Mea Zimni Vigamar. He taught this student, whatever they learned, 400 times. And then he would understand it, Gamar. Then he would learn it. Then he would have it down. The word Gemara. Okay, that this is what happened every time they learned. Yomachad, one day, Bayuha Lemilsa Dmitzva. He had pointed out, or Pareda had pointed out, that there was a mitzvah that he was going to have to do later on. Tanalei, he taught him the whole thing. We'll see as it goes on in the story. He taught him all 400 times. But this time, his student did not get it. He didn't learn it. He couldn't chap it, even after all the teaching. So Rav Pareda said, what happened different today? I didn't do anything different. I still taught it 400 times. So Amalei, the student said, Midahi Shaita. From that moment that you mentioned, the Amalei Lamar, that Marad said, Ika Milsa the Mitzvah, that there's some mitzvah that you had to do later on. Aschai l'da'atai. I had like a hesach hadas. I had a breach in concentration. V'chol shaita, and every moment while we were learning, Amina, I was telling myself, Hashtakai mar. Now Rebbe is going to get up and do his mitzvah. Hashtakai mar. Now Rebbe's going to get up and do his mitzvah. The student had like a kind of anxiety about, oh, Rebbe's going to leave right now. So this is the student's explanation of why he wasn't able to get it. So Amar Lei, so Rav Pareda said to him, Hav dateich. Give your attention. Va'atzni leich. And I'll teach it to you. Hadar tani lei. Again, he taught it. Dalad mea zimni. 400 times. At that point, the Gemara says, Nafka baskala. A baskal went out. Va'amar lei. And the baskal says to Rav Pareda, Nicha leich. Is it good for you? Would you rather have Dilispu Lach Dalad Meyashani to have another or an additional 400 years onto your life? Or would you rather Titisku At Vidoreich La'amad Asi, that you and your generation would be Zocha la'amadasi to olam haba. So Amar Rabbeinu said to the Baskol, the nizku ana vidarai. I should have a zechus on olam haba and my whole generation la'alma da'asi. I'd prefer that me and my whole door get olam haba. So Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem said to them, this is interesting, Amar Lahan, right? Maybe we'll get back to that. Amar Lahan Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said to them, Tenu lo zu vizu. Give to this one, to Rav Breda, this one and that one. Meaning give him both 400 years of life and give him his request of Olam Haba for himself and for his door. Okay, this is a pretty awesome story let's stop the screen share. And you tell me, what do you think this story is about?
Teaching children with learning differences.
Yeah. I think
accommodating.
Accommodating is definitely a feature of this story. Yeah. What else?
He realized he made a mistake, right? And then he recommitted to doing it. He didn't go run off to do whatever mitzvah he had in his mind. He took the time, he put that mitzvah aside that he was going to do, and he redid. You know, when he realized that the nervousness or whatever that he gave his student to wipe that away, he had to redo the whole thing.
Yeah, I never really thought about it that Rav Breda had made a mistake, but you're for sure right, right? I mean, maybe Rav Breda he himself didn't know what he did wrong until afterwards, right? For sure, I think that's definitely part of recognizing the learning differences is that we're not, you know, even if you have the IEP. Doesn't necessarily mean you know what the differences are going to be, right? He clearly knew he had to teach him 400 times. Yeah. Okay, let's say we're looking at midos. Midos that we derive from this story about how to learn. And we definitely have one, right? Recognizing who you're talking to, you know, recognizing who our students are, who our children are. That's definitely part of it. Admitting to mistakes, that's a good one. But what else? Especially from a learner's perspective.
Well, from the teacher's perspective, it's like, what kind of energy are you bringing into the room and how does that affect the student?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Right. Creating an environment in which there's distractions or anxiety is definitely not helpful. That's true. And I would do want to get back to that point. Definitely want to get back to that point. But I think about two things. I look at the story and they're both these elements are in the same Mishnah, which is really interesting. And to appreciate, you know, that there are two ways to look at the story is to realize that, you know, we should look at all the people in the story and think about it from each perspective. And I my brother wrote a story once, one of my favorite creative stories. I think the name of the story is called The Donut. And if I'm not mistaken, the assignment from his college class was to write a story with different perspectives. And in the story, I think it's first written from the perspective of the husband and then who's waiting for his wife to come out of the dry cleaners. And then from the wife who comes out of the dry cleaners to find that her husband has left the car and has gone to the bakery shop to get a donut. And then from the perspective of the donut, which is about to be bought, by the husband, and you know, the wife has, they've just started this new diet and she's really upset. She comes in and, you know, hits the donuts to the floor. And it's a genius story. That's the whole story. That's it. That's the entire story. But it's three different perspectives. So what's going on in this story is there's the perspective of the student, right? His anxiety. And there's the perspective of Rav Breda. And leaving aside this one time event where Rav Breda taught him 400 times a second time. What's it like to be that student? What's it like to be that student who has to be taught by the Rebbe 400 times before he gets it? We just said a second ago, four times. Rebbe Akiva said, no, don't be particular, four times until your student gets it. Okay, so I would have said, okay, but Rebbe Akiva's saying three times, five times maybe. Rebbe Akiva taught his student 400 times. What's it like to be that student and say to your Rebbe, I really need you to repeat it many, many, many times before I get it. You know how embarrassing it is. And then after everybody has gone that length, and then to admit that something happened this time and the student didn't get it. I think this is like a really powerful moment to describe or to express what the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos. I'll look at it, I'll bring it up in a second. Lo habayshan lameid. Someone who gets embarrassed, someone who is easily embarrassed, is never going to learn. And it's curious because the Mefarshim on the Mishnah, we'll see in a second, point out that busha is actually a good mita. Everywhere else, to be a busha, to be someone who's embarrassed by being put in the public eye, usually it's a good thing. That's, you know, that our world can use a little bit more embarrassment, but not for Torah learning. Not for Torah learning. If a person doesn't know or is uncertain, but they're embarrassed to ask, so then they're never gonna learn. And this student has no busha, and in the most positive sense, he has no busha. He thinks he doesn't understand. He needs to be able to say it again, and he asks. And the next part of the Mishnah, which we'll talk about, which I think has a deep element, and that is lo hakatan melamed, someone who's particular. Someone who's meticulous, someone who often loses patience, is not going to be a good teacher. And Rav Breda clearly in this story illustrates a tremendous amount of patience, tremendous patience. You know how much time he's giving to the student, and then some. So it's definitely bespeaks that. And then the third point is the point that has already been stated. The idea of being distracted in our learning. That's like the donuts perspective, right? Being distracted, the objective. If Torah is done in a way where we're distracted, if we don't take care of our environment and make sure that we've depleted all the distractions as much as possible, then it's hard to get into that deep state where processing really happens and then the grasping of the material really happens. And we might want to make it fun, and we do need to incentivize and you know, if candy is the incentivization, then great. If it's points, then fantastic. But it's got to be one that engenders, you know, as much deep thinking, age appropriate, as we can get. So I wanted to take a look at that Mishnah and see, especially pick up on the lo hakatan melamed, but also see the first part of the Mishnah of lo habayshan lameid. So I'm just going to pull it up, and then I'll screen share with us again.
Can you explain kaptan?
Yeah, kaptan means. Like it's like the word to be makbid on something, to be particular or meticulous. And it has a connotation of being short-tempered or a stickler. So if a Rebbe or a parent says, you know, it's got to be done a certain way, and you're not towing the line, and he's short-tempered, so then how is the environment going to work? How is the learning going to play out? If Rav Breda didn't go on, if he didn't have as much patience as he did, he just wouldn't have taught. He wouldn't have taught. Okay, I'm going to call this person, see if we can explicate this a little further. Okay. Safari. Share again. Okay, so here's the Safari webpage. I want to just navigate it again, right? Here's the, that's how it comes up. And then reading Mishnah, we're going to scroll all the way down to see, it goes section by section. So it's Zerayim. And then Moed and Pirkei Avos is where we want, which is all the way to the end of Nezikin. So here's Avos. And the first Mishnah we want is Perek Beis. And there's actually an interesting, I don't know why this is the case, but there's a difference between the Mishnayos, how they're enumerated in the Siddur and how they're enumerated in a Mishnah. So the Mishnah we want in some Mishnayos is Mishnah Hay, which is right here. But I did notice, I think in the Siddur, it's Mishnah Vav. So it's just something to be aware of when learning Pirkei Avos that different, or even though we have a set daf for the for Gemara, and most of the Mishnayos have only one sequence, but for some reason Pirkei Avos Mishnah and Seder is a little bit different than the Mishnah and the Mishnayos. So here's our Mishnah, right? So who are you, Omer? So who's speaking? It was Hillel speaking. Hillel said, "Ein bur yirechet," right? A bur, someone who is ignorant, is not going to have someone who's fear of sin. V'lo amar et chased, someone who has not been trained cannot be a chased. And here we go. V'lo habayshan lamed, someone who gets embarrassed and is worried about being embarrassed won't learn. V'lo hakaptan milamed, and someone who is particular or meticulous, short-tempered, is not going to be an effective teacher. He won't be. He'll have a difficult time teaching. So one of the things that's really great is that it has these, you know, resources on the side. Now, until you click on it, it won't give you all the resources. When you click on the text that you want, so click more Mishnah Hay. So I see I have Mefarshim, Tanakh, Talmud. So I want to look at a few of the Mefarshim here. So the first is the classic parish in the Mishnah, the Bar Tanura. And let's see, is there actually an English Bar Tanura? Oh, wow, English Bar Tanura. That's awesome. So this is what we want. A person prone to being ashamed cannot learn, since one who is embarrassed to ask, lest they will make fun of him, will always remain with his questions. Right. So this is the first, and this is a rule. This is a meter we need to teach our children. We need to be aware that if they're going to be embarrassed, they are going to hesitate to ask, and then they won't learn. So it's a kind of to teach them to be courageous in their asking the questions, and we need to make an environment for them where we don't embarrass them. You know, we never respond to a question with, "You didn't teach that in school, right? That's not going to be helpful." We want to really encourage courage to ask questions, and make sure that our children are aware that there's such a thing as being embarrassed, and recognize that learning means being open to saying, "I don't know. Can I have this explained again?" Okay, very simple idea that we talked about. And next, an impatient or exacting person. So what does the Bar Tanura say? I have the English here. A teacher who is impatient with the students when they ask him questions cannot teach properly, but rather he needs to cheerfully explain the halacha to his students. I love this additional word, cheerfully, right? No matter how many times he's explaining it again, I wonder how happy Rav Frieda was. Actually, I'm really curious to see what the Hebrew is. He says, "El tzarech shigaz b'lo panim," right? He has to explain with Saber Panim Yafos, with a beautiful countenance, the correct halacha to his students. That is how the Bar Tanura understood this Mishnah. Like we were saying, right? Obviously, if you're impatient, then you're not going to teach. And what happens if you have a cheerful, you know, disposition when you teach? Your students are going to want to hear what you have to say. Your children are going to want to hear what you have to say. You know, it's not going to be uncomfortable for them. Okay, that's the Bar Tanura. I want to look at two other commentaries on this Mishnah. One is Rabbeinu Yonah. It's also a classic commentary. Rabbeinu Yonah right here. Okay, there's a lot here. Let's see if there's English for this one. Oh, there's English. Okay, here we go. So I think Lo Habayshan Lamed, Rabbeinu Yonah says the same thing as the Bar Tanura, but I think he says a different comment about Lo Hakaptan Lamed. Here we go. An impatient person cannot teach. It is not needed that a teacher be angry, nor that he be short of patience, but rather he should be magnanimous and answer everything that he has that they ask. Even if they have difficulty understanding his answer, he should review it for them until they come to the depth of the matter. That's the key element of the story. Review it for them until they come to the depth of the matter. Right? That's what Beda is really doing in this story 400 times, really, really unbelievable. And in that particular episode, it was twice over, right? Okay. Adkan the Bar Tanura. Let's get to one more commentary. The last one. I think it's also very interesting. Very interesting. And then I think it develops it one more layer. So again, Lo Habayshan Lamed. So the Tiferes Yisrael, the Yachin of Boaz, that's this parish, says the same thing as we saw already so far. But in Lo Hakaptan Milamed, he says an interesting thing. Actually, let's see if it's English. Yeah, I didn't think so. Okay. So Lo Hakaptan Milamed. Someone who's meticulous is not going to be able to teach. Says the Teferis Yisrael. Eino ro'oi umesugo lihios malamed talmidim. He doesn't have the correct disposition to be a teacher of students. Omor la'ida, or a leader of a community. Dimavan she'al yidei hakas, this is new for us, not only is there a problem with his anger, that in his anger, yistalik chachmas hamalamed ba'oto shah, lahasbir dvarav yafet. In his anger, he will actually lose his eloquence and wisdom, right? Yistalik chachmas hamalamed. He will not be as wise. He will not be as clear if he has lost patience. And then that next point is what we said already. V'yitzbalbel da'as mashmiya v'shomeya. Anyone who tries to listen to him will be confused if they hear him in his anger. And v'lanze, eich yashkia chatamet al divrei sono. How you could expect the student to listen to someone who is expressing frustration or anger with him. You know, how could you have a Rebbe or a teacher who's kikiv shan ha'esh, like a furnace of fire, or hayore zikim chitzim umaves vivo, where there's like arrows coming from him and death surrounding him. Very, very dramatic. But what the Teferis Yisrael is saying is another layer of this. Not only if a teacher or parent is impatient, he's not going to want to learn. But even if he tries to teach, the students, our children, they won't want to listen to us. And we, in our own frustration, will be less eloquent and will lose command of the material that we want to discuss. I think this is a really, really important idea. To recognize it about ourselves, you know, when we find ourselves losing patience or coming up short, and we have to recognize that we are in danger of not only ruining the moment, but also just losing what we know about, what we think we know about the sigya, right? Something that I've learned that rashi before, but I won't even know that it's there if I lose my patience. It's an astounding point, and it's actually several stories in Chumash about Moshe Rabbeinu. Every time Moshe Rabbeinu gets angry, he makes a mistake and overlooks a simple halacha. It's an interesting point. You know, in the Chumash itself, Moshe Rabbeinu is overlooking halachas, right? People come back from fighting the war of Klei Midyan, against Midyan, and Moshe gets upset, and he forgets to tell everybody they have to kasher the kelim. Right? Simple rules of kashrus, he just forgot. So if Moshe can forget when he gets angry, so then certainly, if we find ourselves being impatient, we have to recognize not only is the avira, the atmosphere being ruined, but we're going to lose the wisdom that we're trying to get over. So that's from the perspective of the student, our child, busha, and from the perspective of the teacher, patience. We need to show our children to learn takes courage, and to learn and teach takes patience. And if our student's going to come home with homework and there's a teaching element to our students learning, like we saw in the first Gemara, right? Eventually the student becomes the teacher. It means he needs some patience as well. Okay, and the final line, and we'll just close with this, is what we said before about having an environment in which the distractions are absolutely depleted. I someone quoted this study to me. I've heard this study quoted a few different places. That there's some study about cell phone use. And if a child has a cell phone in the room, they're like constantly looking to see if they're going to get a buzz or going to get some message. And just simply removing the phone from the room, putting it somewhere else, is enough to diminish that level of distraction, of anxiety. We hear the student and the steward of Pareda saying, I thought Rebbe was going to get up at any moment, so it was hard for me to get into it. You know, again, the phone is kind of like a silly example, but yeah, if there's something that our children is constantly looking to, you know, who's going to come in the room. You know, if we can find a space in the house where it's isolated, or go to a base medrash with our kids where, you know, we think there's going to be fewer distractions, or the other children in the family won't bother us. you know, that's also an element of the story of Rupreda. He gave so much focus to this one student, you know. I don't know, I'm not sure what Rupreda did with his other students, but it's definitely a sharp point. And it reminds me of a Musser schmooze that I heard when I was in YU. I heard this schmooze a few times, but I was reminded, someone quoted to me today, Noach Goldson, but Noach Goldson quoted this Musser schmooze to me today. So I wanted to share the main idea from it. There's a Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara says, I won't pull it up, but it's a very famous Gemara. The Gemara says, Zos chukas ha-Torah, adam piyamus ba'ohal. Right, this is the rule of the Torah, the chok of the Torah. When a person dies in a tent, right? And then the psukim can go on to talk about the halachos of Toma. But the drasha is, Zos chukas ha-Torah, adam piyamus ba'ohal. The Torah is only acquired by someone who kills himself over learning that Torah. So in the most extreme way, the Rambam says, if a person wants to be a master of Torah, they have to really minimize how much space in their life their career takes. And, you know, they're really going to live in a simple house, eat simple food, and spend so much time learning the Torah. That's the most extreme version of it. But even if we're not going to be in a position that way, you know, and our children are definitely not in a position to kill themselves over Torah and diminish their career, whatever that would mean for our children. But Yitzchak Cohen from YU, an amazing, amazing idea, said, when a person learns Torah, he's talking about a businessman, a person learns Torah, the rest of the world has to see them as if they're dead. Sounds really bizarre. But imagine, like, you're calling up your best friend's house and, you know, you wanna play basketball with him, and his mom picks up the phone and he says, you know, can I speak to Shlomi? And the mom says, no, you can't speak to Shlomi. He's dead. And there's no way you can get to the Shlomi. Why? Because Shlomi's learning. And it's like he's dead. There's nothing you can say. There's nothing to do to get through, to disturb him. And Rav Yitzchak Cohen would scream and scream and scream. He's dead. He's dead. And he gave this muscle of, like, this business guy. You know, he has an hour to learn every day. And he tells his secretary, whoever calls, just tell them that I'm dead. I'm not available. You know, tell him not available. So then, oh, no, it's really important. It's emergency. Well, if he's dead, there's no emergency. It's going to be able to get through. And that's the idea. The idea is that, you know, to completely disregard any potential distractions. Everything, it's like they just have to take care of it themselves. And, you know, for us as parents, you know, we try to set aside time to learn with our kids, right? I say to rest hakeva, make Torah a keva, a kavua thing. We try to set time, but then things happen in the house, right? Dinner has to be prepared, you know, toilet needs to be plunged. Or whatever, we're expected to get up and do other things in the house. But we have to, if we're learning with our kids, we have to tell them that this is like a set time. This is how much we're learning for. And nothing is going to pull me away. Nothing is going to distract us, right? We can't make, as he said, Rupreda's mistake by saying, you know, this might happen. I'll have to get up. We have to tell them, no, this, nothing is distracting us. Nothing is disturbing our time. We are dead to the rest of the world. We're just learning right now. And I think that's definitely a mida that a learner needs to acquire. Any studier needs to acquire that mida. Right? And that's, I think, the final mida, to really give it a complete focus. I mean, that's true for all studying of deep material. We need to give it kind of like a full deep thinking, deep focus. So what we reviewed a little bit. So let's just do a review of what we did, and then I'll take any questions anybody has. So first is the review of some of the technology, right? Hebrew books, and there's some really good English translations for some of the stuff on Safaria, but not all. And we analyzed the story of Rupreda and how it applies to review, that our students are sometimes teachers, sometimes, you know, need to review it in different ways, and sometimes need to do it over and over and over again. And the main midos that we talked about today were not having any busha, kind of a courage to be embarrassed, vulnerability maybe, and and us having patience, and obviously our students, our children need to have patience, but we need to have patience for them. And asay Torah Sakeva, kind of depleting the distractions from our learning environment and making sure we don't bring any distractions into that learning environment. Okay. It's really great to see everybody. If anybody has any questions, I'd love to take them. Anything specific or things that they want to hear for next week. Otherwise, wish I have a great week. I hope to see you on Tuesday. Oh, Larry, yeah?
I was just going to say Ashka.
Oh, thank you. All right.
You're welcome.
Good to see everybody. All right, have a good night.